Blog Talk Radio.
So my name is Al Diaz, author of The Titus Concept, producer of the film Beyond Hope and Transformational Guide. And I also have my wonderful co-host, Tracy Lee, who is the Freedom Architect, constructing freedom worldwide through physical, emotional, and spiritual healing, and unlocking the keys to universal consciousness one emancipation at a time. Today our topic is learning to fight without fighting. First, a couple of announcements. Continue to check back here on Blog Talk Radio on the Rewrite Your Story host page for upcoming shows and co-hosts. Also, go to rewritestory.com for a very special gift that we are giving away. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring on my co-host, Tracy Lee. Hi, Tracy. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, and happy Monday to everybody listening. How are you doing, Al?
Doing really well also. So how's everything in Texas going for you?
Still raining. But besides that, it's wonderful. Had a good weekend, and looks like we're in the final stretch, last 30 days before I start that Asian tour. So starting to heat up excitement-wise down here.
Congratulations, and I'm really happy for you. So learning to fight without fighting, and from your perspective, what is fighting?
And so this is such a paradoxical piece of advice and a paradoxical title, because how can you do anything without doing that something, eat without eating, fight without fighting? But the word fight is such a broad term. And so what I wanted to talk about today was, you know, when people say they're fighting, the end goal of fighting is to win. And so the message behind it is how to get your way and how to win and how to move forward without engaging in confrontation. So we can kind of recoin the phrase that way, if you will.
Interesting. So fighting, can it be anything from a physical altercation to an argument to actually being quiet and not saying anything to each other, but in reality you're fighting each other by being quiet. So there's a broad variety of fighting then, correct?
So, yeah. So, I mean, I would like to, for the purpose of the show, or at least from my perspective, define fighting as having an end goal of getting your way, or wanting to affect some type of change where, you know, your way is the right way, or wanting to win. Because the goal of a fight, you know, literally, if you go to a boxing match, two people are fighting until they hit each other, until one person can't stand up anymore. And so, I mean, I guess it's a little bit like Plato philosophy, but we can also define terms in other ways besides their literal definition. So fighting would be an act with the intent to win something.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So, how do we fight without fighting then, with the intent to win, or they don't go together?
Well, let's talk about personal relationships, because and this show topic was inspired by some things that I have been going through online from some people who don't disagree, and I'd like to share a little bit of my personal background in that. I used to be the biggest fighter. I mean, I used to always have to have the last word. I always have to use to prove my point. And I would never stop until, you know, the person I was arguing with would say, you know what, you're right. But sometimes, you know, when we get involved in these things, we end up hurting ourselves and rolling in the mud, if you will, because we end up saying things that we don't mean. We end up turning the argument or the disagreement personal and insulting the other person. And by the time it's over, you know, we've hurt, you know, the two people have hurt each other so much that the broad goal of even, or the objective of what was trying to be accomplished or what was trying to get done, is completely lost in all of the mud that was flung between the two parties. So, and my kind of final advice, or kind of, you know, what I'm trying to get at here is to teach people sometimes the most powerful thing you can do is just to turn your head and walk away. I think that when people know that you're the kind of person who will not engage, they'll think very carefully before engaging with you if they understand what the consequences really are.
Okay, so, and I get that point, and I understand that, and actually I agree with you, but here's another flip side to that, though, and I know I've dealt with it personally, both receiving this and giving this, is that if you're in the middle of a heated discussion and one of the persons walks away, because they just don't want to go down that road or that rabbit hole, it can be very irritating for the other person, for it to all of a sudden just suddenly stop. And if anything, it can even escalate the emotion or what is being felt for the person that's being ignored. So how do you deal with that?
Well, and that's exactly what I'm getting at here is if people know that you're the kind of person that will walk away when you're disrespected, they'll think very carefully about disrespecting. People walk away for all different kinds of reasons. Some people have trained themselves to walk away before they let something nasty or insulting or mean come out of their mouth. And if this is the case, and I know that this is one tactic that I have used in the past when I was a lot darker of a place, you know, sometimes it is better just to walk away than to say something you're not going to mean. And for the person sitting there and feeling insulted, they should appreciate that, but they should also consider how it got to the point where one person felt they had no other option but to walk away. I think it sends a very powerful message.
Okay. Now, how does one person decipher when the person that's walking away is walking away from the escalation of the fight or the argument versus somebody that just is giving up and which is walking away? Because some people do that. They just say, you know what, I give up. I'm walking away.
Sometimes, well, I mean, I guess I'm just taking – it's easier for me to look at it from the perspective of the person that's walking away. But sometimes, it gets to a point where you have to agree to disagree. And if someone is so passionate about something that they believe something so wholeheartedly, sometimes there's really nothing that someone else can say to change that person's mind. Maybe they're just not there yet. You know, I can bring up the example of someone who's struggling with a drug dependency. And if you're trying to talk someone to going into treatment who's high on pills, you know, you can cry, you can plead, you can beg. But at the end of the day, if they say no and they think that they don't have a problem and they think they just want to sit there and continue on, at some point, the right thing to do is to walk away and to wait until that person's ready. And there's all kinds of other examples besides, you know, like an intervention or dealing with someone with this kind of problem. But you can kind of apply the same logic to any situation, really. Sometimes people just aren't ready. Sometimes the timing's just not right. And if the timing's not right, we have to learn to pick up on that and to just accept, hey, maybe we can pick this up at another time. We can either agree or disagree. But, you know, slinging mud back and forth doesn't accomplish anything. You know, if anything, it just bring the person, if there is a person on higher ground, it'll just pull that person down into the mud also.
Okay, so, and I brought up three scenarios here, so at the beginning of the show, and thank you for sharing. So what about a physical altercation? How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, so there's so many different kinds of physical altercations. Are we talking about someone pointing a gun in our face, or are we talking about two guys that get in a fight in a bar over a girl, or are we talking about a man hitting a woman, or are we talking about two kids in a school playground?
Wow. Okay. Let's start from the beginning. Let's start where it all starts. Two kids fighting in the playground.
Yeah, and so that's probably like the most. I like that example too because it has a certain innocence to it, right? Two kids who are, you know, they've got those hormones running through their veins, and for whatever reason, they've, sparked each other's fires. And I like what they teach kids in some of these Taekwondo programs where they say, you know what, we're going to learn to defend ourselves, or we're going to do everything we can to walk away from the fight and to minimize damage and to minimize physical damage. So, you know, if someone shoves you, you know, if someone shoves your kid, you teach the kid, you know what, don't do that again. I'm going to tell an adult or try to walk away. But of course, if the kid has another kid pinned on the ground, it's great if that kid knows a couple moves, like how to, you know, some jujitsu or some Taekwondo or whatever it is to get out. But once they get out, they need to walk away. So I'm all in favor of minimizing damage. I'm not so sure that, you know, an eye for an eye is a good concept in terms of understanding the karmic wheel of justice. But I don't believe that, you know, I don't believe that we have the right to try to control that wheel and to be the deliverers of karmic fate to others. I think we have to, like you posted on Facebook this morning, learn to lead ourselves and expect to do the same for themselves. And, you know, we're not a bunch of vigilantes here. We're not here to, you know, inflict punishments on people and superimpose our versions of right or wrong and punishment and justice. You know, justice can have many different interpretations for every different day, week, and minute of, you know, minute of each day. So I don't know.
So I'm enjoying this topic actually now. So let's get deeper into two kids fighting in the playground. How about bullies? How do you, How do you fight without fighting if the kid's being continuously picked on?
And so this and this is really the heart of this whole topic, and you're always guided to say the right word. That's why I love doing the show with you. And so what this topic for me boils down to is bullying. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Kids who are bullies turn into adults who are bullies, and then those adults who are bullies end up having kids, and those kids turn into be the new generation of bullies. And why do kids feel a need to bully? Because they don't have enough love, both for themselves and from their parents. They're not raised from love, and they don't feel a sense of self-love, so they have to receive validation that they're stronger or they're bigger or that they're higher than somebody else by showing everyone else how cool they are, by picking on someone else. That's what bullying is. And the cycle has to be stopped. And we can teach our kids that we don't have that, you know, to have compassion for bullies. Say, you know what, son or daughter, you know, this guy's picking on you because he really doesn't love himself and because he has problems. So we need to feel a little sorry for him, have a little compassion for him. And, you know, we have a happy family here at home. Everyone loves each other. We say, I love you, probably. And, you know, in this bully's house, like, nobody tells him I love him. Nobody buys him a Christmas gift. And so if we can teach kids to understand maybe from that perspective, they won't take things so personally and they won't feel this need to, you know, inflict their own form of justice onto these bullies, because really it's not our place to do that.
So, I totally agree with you that being an indicator in regards to bullies, there's something going on within their home or in their personal life that's driving them to be a bully, because they're low self-esteem, low self-worth, and they're trying to utilize whatever they have, their size or their demeanor or their whatever, you know, in order to overtake another person, because they want to be able to prove to themselves they are better than what they think they are. And so I get all that. But what about the person on the flip side of that? You know, how does a kid fight without fighting against a bully?
You know, a bully, what they want, their end motivation is to elicit a response. They want to see someone else cry. Deep down, they even want to be punished. Deep down, they want the teacher to say, you know, get in the corner, stop it. And so teaching avoidance and teaching how to avoid those kind of situations and how to minimize the drama in those situations, really that's how to put out the fire before it starts. Because really, if there is no response and if there's no scene, because that's what they want. They don't feel love, so they want to create some kind of scene. They want to see somebody cry because they feel so bad inside, so they want to see that someone else feels bad too, so they want to make that person cry. Like, really, really think about the psychology of that. And so, you know, and it's hard to teach kids to have this kind of strength. But if it, you know, after a while, if you say, hey, Snotface, hey, Fatso, you know, hey, Lardo, and you get no response from that person, eventually it's going to stop. It's kind of like if you knock at someone's door, you ring the doorbell, nobody comes to the door, you might sit there for a few minutes and ring again, but eventually you're just going to leave, right? You know,
but
it's like a stray cat. You feed it comes back, you know?
But doesn't the person that's being – put down or and ignoring the bully, and like I said, to make it happen so that they quit, that no response may have them stop saying whatever. But in the same time, doesn't the other person, the other kid, feel belittled and demeaned and eventually start perhaps even subconsciously accepting what is being told to them, even though they're not responding to the bully?
Yeah, I was that kid, Al. That was me. And I let that stuff affect me for years. And I sat there and listened to it. And I'd go home and I told my mom about it. And my mom would tell the teachers. And, you know, but looking back on it now, having gone through everything that I've gone through, if I had my own kids, which I don't, it's so hard to teach and to foster this kind of strength in children. But it is possible, I believe it, to teach kids at a young enough age to have enough self-worth. To really not care about what other people say. And does it sting? Is it hurtful? I'm not going to lie. Of course it's hurtful. I mean, even I had, you know, two online bullies, you know, say some nasty things to me last night. I'm 36 years old. That stung for a second. But I'm not going to lower myself to that level by engaging in name calling. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Tell the kid that, you know, someone calls you fat and you call them a snot? The bully who's making him upset. And so, you know, we don't have to lower ourselves to those kinds of behavior just to be the universal, you know, hand of karmic justice, as I like to call it. that's, you know, let karma take care of itself. That's such a beautiful thing to do when you have the power to just walk away and have self-confidence and have self-love enough to know that, you know, karma is going to adjust itself and all of these things will eventually even out in the long term. And teach your kids the saying, like, what comes around goes around, because it really does. You know, and let them know that eventually it will come back and it will bite that person in the bum, and your enjoyment and your kind of retribution will be, you know, maybe you'll know about it, maybe you won't, but either way, you know that you're not going to have those types of karmic marks on your soul for lowering yourself and engaging in that type of behavior.
So it sounds like the bottom line the bottom line for both the bully and the person, the quote unquote the person receiving the bullying, is they both got to have self-love for each other, because if the bully understands who he is and has self-love for himself, he's not going to bully anymore. The person that's receiving the bullying, if he has enough self-worth, self-esteem, self-love for himself or herself, then they're going to be able to handle the remarks or the comments that is being thrown at him and be able to walk away and like, just let it roll off their shoulder and say, okay, that person has problems, has issues, but it's not going to affect me. And again, we're all human, and I'm not going to lie and say, hey, that's easier said than done, but if we have that self-love. And by the way, I also understand what you went through, Tracy, because I went through it too. I was a gentle giant, and I went through it, so I get it. And it's fun. And I didn't. And to be quite honest, it contributed to my low self-esteem and low self-worth for a long time. I subconsciously accepted all that. But you're right. If we can show our kids as parents to have self-love, self-worth, high self-esteem, so that if a bully does come around, that they can literally walk away and not thoroughly accept what's being told to them, then we raise a kid that's going to be remarkable in their own right for society and for their own self-worth. Now, here's another interesting aspect. As I was listening to you, and part of the reason all this this exists is our gang, because gangs get together because they feel a camaraderie or love within a group of people. And there's friendship and companionship and love in this in gangs, even though it's like the wrong kind of energy that you want your kid to be involved in. But if your kid is not being raised with self love and self worth, they're going to venture out and find it somewhere else. And if it's not bullying, they're going to end up joining gangs, and that's what's happening everywhere. Even with the terrorist attacks that we're dealing with, these people are going towards beliefs because they're not getting it somewhere. They're not getting it either at home or their relationships with their wives or their husbands or whatever. They're being magnetized towards belief systems and gangs and just because they're not getting it from wherever they live or wherever they're at.
Well, the sad thing, too, about gangs, and this is kind of pointing in a different direction of something else we've talked about before, is gang is an example of the danger of loyalty, you know. And I've always said, Al, that loyalty is a very dangerous form of judgment a very dangerous form of attachment that fosters judgment. And what I mean by that is when you're undyingly loyal to something, you will do things that you wouldn't otherwise do just because you're trying to protect somebody that you're attached to. And we've talked about this before, but loyalty can be extremely dangerous. And gangs is a perfect one of those examples. And the second, basically what you said is kind of funny, but it's summed up in that meme that you shared this morning. And I think that you should attach that meme to this radio show when we share it publicly. But when you said that, you know, be a leader and allow others to be a leader for themselves. And that's exactly what we're talking about, is that we all have to learn to self-lead and we have to allow others to do the same. And so starting from that very basic principle and very basic concept, it's we have to allow people to experience growth and evolution and change. And we can't just impart and superimpose our teachings and our wisdom onto others if they're not ready to learn or if they're not ready for it yet. We have to allow them for that to happen for themselves at their own pace and at their own speed. So I think that piece of wisdom you shared this morning, that goes hand in hand to what we're talking about right now.
Okay, let's move up the ladder here. So you're out on a date, or a guy's out on a date with a female, and some idiot, a bully, comes up and starts messing with your date.
What do you mean messing with? Does he pull a knife or does he make a comment?
Let's say a comment, and maybe grab your ass. And obviously your date's upset and looks at you and says, "What are you going to do about that? The guy just called me the B word and grabbed my ass and wants to take me home with him." You're the guy. What do you do?
Well, I'm not a guy, but as a self-loving, self-respecting, heterosexual female, let me tell you what I would find the most attractive. Some females would say they want to see the guy punch himself out. But for me, what would be the most attractive is if the gentleman like made some type of like face at the guy who did that, like looking at him like, "Who the hell are you?" and like just like grabbed me by the hand and said, "Come on, sweetheart," or "Come on, babe, let's get out of here. Let's go. We have better things to do." And just completely just didn't entertain the guy at all and completely disregarded him. Because that guy was looking for a fight. When people come looking for a fight, what, you are going to give them what they want and let them win by getting a fight? It's completely counterintuitive, really, if you stop and think about it. The way to win is to remove yourself from the situation. And I would find that attractive if somebody did that. Instead of trying to show them a cheat code.
You wouldn't be offended if the guy didn't stick up for you or say something to that guy?
You know, I don't need a man to stick up for me personally. I can stick up for myself. I am attracted by, of course, I would like it if he maybe said that's completely inappropriate or I'm with her or asked politely to leave. But I don't, you know, I would find it actually unattractive if he engaged with him and made some kind of comment or called him, you know, like you're a this or that or got in his face and said, "You want a piece of this?" I mean, if the guy said, "You want a piece of this?" and like made like a fist, I would probably, that would be the end of my dating with that guy. I don't want to be involved with men like that anymore. It's not attractive to me because it's all just a big show and a big, you know, big macho contest and testosterone show. And I don't want any piece of that anymore.
Okay, here's another one, and let's lower the testosterone, and let's talk about a couple that fights without words. In other words, silence.
Mm.
How do you deal with that?
You know that that's indicative of two people that are just tired. You know, they've probably thrown so many words back and forth between each other. They've argued so much they just can't take it anymore. And at that point, if people are living together and arguing in silence and they've reached a point where, you know, they feel like they can't be in the same room without arguing, so it's easier just to say nothing. And the reason I understand this is because my 12-year relationship got to this point, and this was towards the end of it where I just got tired. I just went in the other room and I knew that there was going to be a verbal attack or bullying or abuse. And I just removed myself and started going to bed early. And that's not happiness. You know, that's not love. That's not communication. That's not what a marriage or a relationship is supposed to be about. So usually if it's reached that point, that's a red flag, you know, that needs to be addressed. Maybe it's time to talk about whether the relationship is really serving both parties.
Interesting. So it sounds like from all these different scenarios that we're talking about, it all comes down to how do you feel about yourself? You know, whether it's self-love, self-care, self-worth, self-esteem, how you feel about yourself is going to dictate not only what you're going to accept from the other person, but what are you going to do for yourself? Do you have the ability to walk away?
Exactly.
And actually, you know, do you have the ability to walk away and not accept the BS that's being told to you? Whether it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter, but have the ability to just walk away.
For me, something I've learned, it's such a powerful tool. And we don't have to use it every single time, but if people know that you will walk away in the face of disrespect invariably, they will think very carefully about disrespecting you. But if people know that you're the type of person who, when disrespected, will engage in argument and fling mud back and forth, you know, they're going to test those waters over and over and over because it's fun and entertaining and they have nothing better to do. But people will think very, very carefully about disrespecting you if they know that you will not engage. So there are
you know what? We only got – go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, something just popped into my head, and we only got a couple minutes to talk about this. But here's another interesting aspect. At some point, though, even though you can walk away, even though you have that high self-love and self-worth and self-esteem and all that other good stuff, self-care, but if you're recycling arguments and fights and physicality and all that, so you need to look inside yourself and ask yourself, why are you allowing these experiences to exist in your life? Whether they happen once a week, once a month, once every few months, once a year, or whatever. If there's a pattern there, you need to look at yourself. Even though you may have the ability to walk away, but yet there's a pattern of fighting or arguing, either in silence or in physical or an argument, verbally, then you need to look at yourself because you need to figure out, why does this keep happening? And so instead of pointing fingers at the other person, whether even if it's a bully, you know, what part of you is allowing that to exist in your life?
Yeah, and that's something that I wholeheartedly agree with, and I continue to ask myself. As these situations manifest lesser and lesser for me, it's one of the things that I've been dealing with since I was a kid. You know, when I was a kid, it was really intense, and then I was involved in two separate abusive relationships, both of which were physically, verbally, and mentally abusive. And now that, you know, I had the courage to escape from that and to walk away from that, every once in a while I'm faced with similar situations, and I believe I'm being tested. And I think nobody's perfect, but I believe I'm working on perfecting my response and making it in the way that's the most beneficial to everyone involved, meaning learning to respect myself and my own boundaries, but also learning not to throw mud, lower myself to that level and, you know, enroll in the mud with those types of engagements. So, yeah, it definitely says something about yourself. And I think the more you learn to deal with these type of situations properly, the less you'll continue to manifest those situations into your life.
For the audience, I just put the link to Human Odyssey Radio for our Facebook fan page. Click on it and join us. And also, if you're listening to the recording, go to do a search on Facebook for Human Odyssey Radio, and you'll find us. And you can post any questions, thoughts, or comments you may have for either Tracy or myself. And again, join us. And if you have anything, any topic you would like for us to address, bring it up, and we'll take a look at it. And so you have any final comments, Tracy?
This is a great topic, and I think that it can be expanded upon. So if there's anyone listening, you have any questions, or you'd like to throw any ideas out there, stick it on the page, and we'd be happy to engage with you in a healthy and positive manner.
Awesome. Tracy Lee, ZetaLineHealing.com, my wonderful co-host. Have you had enough of what you're going through? Contact me, and let's rewrite your story from your existing pain to purpose. It allows you to have the life you truly desire. My email address is l.diazforlove@gmail.com. And remember, every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, join us. Thank you all for joining us. And remember that everything in our past, present, or future is for our best and highest good. Wherever you are at, have a great day or wonderful evening. As usual, Tracy, you rock. Thank you for being a joyous blessing in our life.
Peace and love, everybody. Thank you.
Take care.
All right, Al.